Good afternoon. Well, my last rector's conference, we had to address the whole issue of the scandals from this past summer and what our responsibility is here at Notre Dame Seminary so that you are very confident of the integrity and the standards of our formation program, that you know what to do when you see any behavior that is absolutely inconsistent with the standards of formation, and what you should do on a personal level in dealing with spiritual direction, counseling, formation advising, your responsibility to me as the rector, to your vocation director and bishop. So I thought that was a very thorough conference that I hope provided you support and confidence in what we're doing here at the seminary so that you can certainly experience the fact that this is a healthy community, this is your home, and that you should be comfortable in an environment where you're able to pray, to study, certainly enjoy community life as you're discerning the will of God in your life. So as we now move into these fall days, I want to offer this conference on fraternal correction. The title of the conference is Not As Man Sees, Does God See? Fraternal Charity and Correction Among Seminarians. I want to offer this conference because I believe we're at a point that our community is very healthy for you men to exercise fraternal correction among one another. Now, I want to establish some boundaries so that as you exercise fraternal charity and fraternal correction, you're doing so according to the mind of the church, that you're doing so really steeped in charity. However, recognizing that there are many issues that need to come to the attention of the formation team so that we can understand the boundaries that are in place on what a seminarian is able to do and should do in the practice of correction towards another seminarian, and what he should not do and what should be brought to the formation team. Okay, so this is our conference today. And again, I believe we're in a very good position to encourage a healthy exercise of fraternal correction because of the integrity by which all of you are approaching formation, which I can see is very evident in our community. Now, I want to start off with the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 7, where we hear the Lord's instruction. If you want to avoid judgment, stop passing judgment. Your verdict on others will be the verdict passed on you. The measure with which you measure will be used to measure you. Why look at the speck in your brother's eye when you miss the plank in your own? How can you say to your brother, "Let me take that speck out of your eye," while all the time the plank remains in your own? You hypocrite. Remove the plank from your own eye first, then you will be able to see clearly and take the speck from your brother's eye. I think one of the great opportunities that we enjoy here at the seminary is community life. Most of my adult life has been associated either with seminary community or a graduate house of studies. One of the challenges in community living is our opportunity, let's face it, to see the human condition up front. There are distractions, annoyances, hallway etiquette issues, and even issues that relate to common spaces like the restroom. Yet, somehow it was the Lord's plan to gather apostles together who would establish a fraternity that would be absolutely necessary for preaching the gospel. This is a house of formation, and this is a community. As the Code of Canon Law reminds us, we are a real juridic community. We're not just passing time here. We're not just keeping our thoughts back at home on our parishes or our dioceses or religious communities. That right now, we are an established ecclesial community in the life of the church. Therefore, the way we treat this community, the way we're involved in this community, the way we invest ourselves in this community it can be a reflection of our love for the church, how serious we are about building up God's kingdom right now in this present moment. At the heart of priestly formation is conversion. As St. Paul often writes in his letters, the Christian is about taking off the old man and putting on Christ. And that is our goal here at the seminary. While conversion is the goal of formation at a personal level, at the level of discipleship, the overall mission of the church that we continuously emphasize here is evangelization. And as St. John Paul II wrote, there cannot be any successful evangelization unless we have holy evangelizers. And there cannot be evangelizers unless we have ourselves been first evangelized. And so, as you know, the seminary here, this is not a retreat center. This is not simply a residence for academic study. It is a house of formation where we are constantly deepening our personal conversion and better understanding the mission of evangelization as that is touching our own prayer and our own discernment. For the future priest, you are very enthusiastic in your discernment about the conversion of souls, about saving people for Christ. And yet when we first came into the seminary, we were also reflecting upon ourselves. How has the Lord touched me? After all, the vocation of every Christian is to be a saint. And I know that all of you men here want to be saints, you want to be holy, but that process is not something that is waiting for you in the future. It's not just something that we think about in the past. It is an exercise that is occurring right now in the present moment. We, as a seminary community, like any seminary community, have the Eucharist as the grounding point for everything. The fact that every day, not only do we celebrate Mass, but we're able to have exposition of the Blessed Sacrament. And I know that your spiritual directors are encouraging each one of you to find personal time for prayer, personal time before the tabernacle, as you continue to establish that communion, that intimate communion with the Lord. A Eucharistic community, that's who we are. Good sons of the church is who you are. And if you're going to be good fathers, spiritual fathers, or even married men who are going to be fathers, you must first be good sons of the church. And our relationship with the saints, particularly with Our Lady, is a sense of humility that we bring in our sonship to the church. There can be no authentic community without the presence of the Holy Eucharist. The Eucharist is the center, the foundation, the apex of community life. Hence, the Eucharist is the center, the foundation of your sonship. This is where you find your identity right now as a seminarian. Seminarians are sons of the church. And how good are you at doing that? If right now, as you make a self-reflection, do you see yourself as a good son of the church? Do you see yourself as a good son of Notre Dame Seminary? You know, in his last encyclical on the Eucharist, St. John Paul II, he wrote that the principle and existence of unity presupposed community life. Hence, community life then becomes a consequence, so to speak, of the Eucharist. It was the Eucharist in that upper room that Jesus is establishing that the community flowed from. With those words, do this in remembrance of me, what springs forth from those words and from the Holy Eucharist is the life of the church. And so your attitude towards the church, your attitude as sons of the church, your attitude as being protagonists of unity is all a part of this conversion and is all a part of this discipleship in Jesus. Now, that whole project, this whole process of conversion does not occur in isolation. God wants you to be here at Notre Dame Seminary. And so your personal conversion And your personal discipleship is also rooted in community life. Community life is not an accident of seminary life. It's not just something that occurs on a weekend or occurs in the evening. Community life is where and how you understand the voice of the Lord, being brothers to one another. Each of you have your own dreams and visions. Each of you know how your pursuit of holiness is to take place. It's to be taking place, however, in the work of the community. You did not choose to be with one another. You did not have the choice of who would be living down the hall from you. You did not choose the membership of this community. And so therefore, the great exercise of docility is required from each of you if you're going to be apostles to one another. Indeed, this is an apostolic community. When the Lord chose the apostles, some of them knew one another. Some of them were literally brothers to one another. Others had to learn from each other. And that's how the Lord wanted the apostles to learn from him as they related to one another. And so I appreciate the fact that you embrace this idea of community life, not as an accident, but as the environment by which the Lord is choosing you to be here. Now, when we speak about apostolic friendships, what I'm not presuming is that all of you are going to be best friends to one another. That would be false. That would be shallow. However, what the seminary does expect is an apostolic friendship. This is an apostolic friendship where there is authentic fraternal charity. I know that you all don't know the details of each other's lives. We have over 140 seminarians here. You're not going to get to know the details of yourselves with one another. However, apostolic friendship is a love that you have for this community where no one is left behind. That is on your heart. Apostolic friendship, therefore, does not tolerate cliques. Rather, it promotes healthy friendships that are inclusive. Now, I think an apostolic friendship presumes that there is diocesan bonding. What is the relationship amongst the seminarians from each diocese or religious community? How intentional are you about growing those friendships? I know that we have diocesan nights on Thursday evenings. That is not a requirement of the seminary per se, rather somewhat of a tradition. But beyond those Thursday evenings, how are you growing in apostolic friendships amongst each other as diocesan brothers or brothers of a religious community? I would challenge you to really think about that, to talk about that as a diocese, so that fraternity is growing in an authentic and intentional way amongst each diocese. Now, we are blessed here with a number of diversity realities here at the seminary. And I think apostolic friendship appreciates the cultural, evangelical, and charism diversity that exists here at Notre Dame Seminary. We have over 35 seminarians who come from different countries and different cultural experiences. We also have men of different ages, different life experiences, and that helps build up our community. And that again requires some level of interaction, that you get to experience the diversity as it helps challenge you to be able to receive the Catholicity of our faith here at Notre Dame Seminary. Fraternal charity in a seminary requires one to dispose himself to give a brother's love. How do I go out of my way to bring Christian love to another seminarian? This may be something as simple as the table that you're choosing to sit at meals, where you're sitting in the chapel, where you're choosing to sit in a classroom, how you're greeting one another in your hallways. These expressions of interaction is a way that disposes you to begin exercising Christian love for another person. I would feel terrible if a seminarian felt isolated or disconnected from this community from the simple fact that people are not interacting with one another. I would feel terrible that a man feels alone at the seminary, because this would be a contradiction to fraternal charity, isolationism. Not just the person who feels it, but also the seminarian who is choosing to be isolated from the community. Indeed, he might be very well invested in his personal responsibilities of study and prayer, but not to the point where he is isolating himself from other people, from the community, from the diocese, from hallmates, from classmates. Isolationism can be poison in a seminary community. Now, I want to speak for a moment about accountability to formation. The church makes it clear that each seminarian is responsible for his own formation by way of accountability before God and the church. If seminarians have issues related to temperance with the use of food or drink, addictive behavior regarding pornography or misuse of the internet, same-sex attraction, mental health issues that exhibit depression or anxiety, those matters must be brought to spiritual direction. They really ought to be brought before counseling, and when it's appropriate, and most of these issues, it's very appropriate, must be brought to the external forum and to me as the rector. When we talk about fraternal charity and fraternal correction, what I want to emphasize is that you are not formation advisors or spiritual directors to one another. There should not be a burden placed on you regarding your need to bring correction to certain types of situations. In some circumstances, when you see a type of behavior in another seminarian that ranks at the level of mortal sin, this needs to be brought to my attention. Such behavior, for example, would include criminal behavior, illegal drug-related issues, inappropriate relationships with women, homosexual behavior, or any form of grooming that you would experience from another seminarian. That behavior needs to be brought to my attention immediately so that we can be sure that this community is a safe community, a healthy community, and one that does not tolerate any such behavior. Now, if such behavior is concretely witnessed, you might first want to go to your spiritual director to just be sure and review with him that what you witnessed is in fact something that should be brought to the external forum. The matters that I just identified are matters that relate to immoral behavior, certainly criminal behavior, and those observations cannot remain in the internal forum, because not only does that individual have a right to respond to these issues as a Christian and as a man attempting to embrace conversion, but the church cannot be scandalized or injured by such behavior. This is why it would be good for you to review these matters with your spiritual director to be sure that what you've seen or heard is in fact of that level of criminal or immoral behavior. But then that information needs to be brought to me immediately. Now, with that clarification, I do want to talk now about fraternal correction and how you can exercise this among one another. When fraternal correction is exercised, this can be beneficial to both the person receiving fraternal correction and the person giving fraternal correction. The practice and exercise of fraternal correction should be an aspect of priestly formation and seminary formation, because this is going to help you as a spiritual father and as a pastoral leader in future ministry. I believe that when fraternal correction is exercised appropriately and joyfully, It does speak about the strength of this community, and it speaks about the strength of apostolic friendships. Fraternal correction must always be rooted in fraternal charity. It is never practiced as a way to get even. It is not practiced as a way to judge the other person. Fraternal correction should certainly never be used to hurt the other person. It should not be a response to satisfy my agitation, or it should never be exercised to respond to my anger. Fraternal correction is always rooted in fraternal charity. We must first recognize the legitimate diversity that is present in the community. And this diversity includes varying attitudes, personalities, different cultures. Legitimate diversity does not mean that we tolerate someone else's sin. This does not mean that we see the imperfections in the other person and don't help that person to overcome those obstacles. For example, we can, in a similar way, read in the first book of Samuel, "Not as a man sees does God see, because man sees the appearance, but the Lord looks into the heart." Therefore, we're praying for the grace that allows us to see the way God sees, that we don't make judgments on the state of that person's relationship with God, that we don't make judgments on that person's vocation, that when we are exercising fraternal correction, doing so in fraternal charity, to the best of our ability, that we don't see only what we see, that we're able to see what God sees. Because what we see moves us to mercy. Mercy is what takes us to prayer. Mercy is what helps us understand that we want conversion and we want charity in the other person. This is not about calling out someone else's faults for the sake of calling out someone else's faults. Jesus does not say in that gospel passage from Matthew that I started this conference off, he doesn't say to not correct the other person. Rather, what he is asking for is to remove the planks in our own eyes so that we can see clearly what it is in that other person that needs to be addressed. That means we have to remove from ourselves any judgment, any racism, any immoral judgments on the other person that deals with their looks, that deals with their affect, that deals with anything that is contrary to Christianity. Rather, we want to remove from our eyes those instances where charity does not exist, so that we're able to see very clearly what it is that needs to be corrected. Now, fraternal correction is not just about doing something very nice for the other person. It is a spiritual work of mercy. And we know that there are the seven spiritual works of mercy: instruct the ignorant, counsel the doubtful, admonish sinners, to bear wrongs patiently, to forgive offenses willingly, to comfort the afflicted, and to pray for the living and the dead. Mercy moves the will to have compassion, both of which are considered virtues. Mercy and compassion are the two hinges of fraternal correction. Fraternal correction, therefore, is a moral obligation, and it is a spiritual work of mercy. Before continuing now with this reflection on fraternal correction, I do want to just review some simple admonishments that you can practice for the good of the community and for the good of the other seminarian that is not going to necessarily involve a long process of fraternal correction. These are housekeeping issues. This is something that, because we're all adult men, you should be able to correct right in the moment another seminarian because it's the right thing to do. And I would hope that seminarians would be able to receive these housekeeping corrections appropriately and in a mature way. So for example, you hear music coming too loud from the other student's room. You're able to correct him on the moment. You don't have to run to prayer for that. Hey, can you please keep down your music? Maybe the seminarian has guests in his room. The voices are a little too loud. You can bring a correction to that. If the other person's room smells, that there's an odor that's coming from the room, I think you can certainly call him out on that. Or the person himself is not maintaining personal health, you might say, by way of cleanliness, you can call him out on that and encourage him to wear deodorant. Certainly table manners, the way the person is acting. If there's food on the person's clothing, the person needs to use mouthwash. The clothes need to be laundered a little bit more. See, these are things that help us support one another with housekeeping observations. I don't think the response to those observations would be, mind your own business. Rather, hey, thanks for pointing that out. We don't want to leave the other person being embarrassed because the way he looks, a lack of uncleanliness, the way he behaves at the table, so on and so forth, okay? Now, let me get into the guts, you might say, of fraternal correction. When you see patterns of behavior that are inconsistent with the life of a seminarian or not desirable for priestly life and ministry, as I mentioned, you have a moral obligation to act because this is a spiritual work of mercy that is required. Some individual situations could include seminarians habitually skipping class, missing chapel regularly, poor use of language, short-tempered, standoffish, again, some physical appearance and looking unkempt, bad breath, unshaven, temperance around the use of alcohol, slothful, poor use of leisure time. Now, some of those issues can be handled right on the spot, but because of the sensitivity of other issues, you will want to exercise a process before administering fraternal correction. So number one, you are observing a behavior, an attitude, something out of sorts with a brother seminarian or maybe even a group of seminarians. The first thing you do is to pray. Ask the Lord to give you the insight to be sure that what you see is what you see. Why are you being disturbed at what you've seen or heard? What is your own disposition? What you want to do is to be sure that there are no other motivations in your heart rather than charity. Number two, talk with your spiritual director to get some counsel. You can also speak with your formation advisor or even myself. You can keep the names out of the situation, because what you're basically doing is first checking your discernment to be sure that what you've seen and what you heard is something that needs to be acted upon. Number three, again, just for the record, if these are formation issues, at some point the formators need to know. You need to discern if you can bring this to the seminarian first and let him deal with the matter with formators, or if the formators need to know directly or immediately. If the matter is not one of urgency, then practice the principle of subsidiarity by going to him first. Number four, continue praying for the seminarian. Pray for God's mercy. You may want to fast for him, offer a rosary for him, spend some of your holy hour for him. Remember, fraternal correction is a spiritual exercise. It is not punitive. It is not a legalistic process. It is an act of charity. Number five, if the seminarian's behavior or attitude has a public quality, You might want to discuss this with very trusted seminarians. However, the last thing you want to do is start gossiping. Every person has a right to their reputation. You do not want to bear false witness against them. In a conversation of charity and respect, you can test the waters with your observations by discussing with very, very trusted seminarians the observation you might have that is somewhat public. So you might want to start the conversation off with, is there anything different you've noticed about him? Or during class, did you detect anything about his demeanor? Last night in the bib, what did you think when he said that? I would not tip your hand at first by actually sharing with that person what you've seen. Rather, what you're doing is testing the waters to see if they also shared the same observation. Okay? Number six, if there is a shared consensus of concern, I would suggest that you again review this with your spiritual director or one of the formators on how you should approach the seminarian if more than one seminarian has seen what you've seen or heard what you've heard. Number seven, I would then suggest that you ask for a conversation with a seminarian. Without being melodramatic, without in any way trying to increase drama in the moment, just simply state your concerns. Now, there's a couple of pointers that you might want to consider. You do not want to say other seminarians have noticed because you are not a spokesperson for them. What you were doing before was testing the waters for yourself. You never act on behalf of other seminarians. That is not fair to the person that you're addressing. Rather, you are speaking on your own behalf only. Now, if the seminarian says, well, has anyone else noticed this? Well, then you can answer the person honestly, but you do not want to introduce that to the conversation. Number eight, if the seminarian receives fraternal correction in a grateful way, well, then there you have it. The exercise was accomplished. However, if he becomes resistant in the conversation, you don't want to turn this conversation into conflict. Gently end it so that the conversation doesn't turn into more conflict. Number nine, there may be some legitimate responses in some cases. Maybe the seminarian has withdrawn from the community a little bit more because he was told to by his spiritual director or by his formation advisor. So you want to be in the position to accept the answer that he gives to you. Remember, you are not the formation advisor. You simply were sharing observations in a brotherly love and charity. You're not there to force him to accept your perceptions or your observations. Number 10, the conversation you have with a seminarian should always remain confidential. If you had consulted other seminarians and they ask you, hey, how did things go? Your response should not go through the conversation again because that seminarian has a right to his reputation. You could just simply say, well, we had the conversation. I shared with him my reflections, and you can leave it at that. Because what you don't want to do is create a clique of people who are talking about a seminarian behind his back. Number 11, if the concerns persist and the seminarian does not accept fraternal correction, but his attitude and his behavior continues in a way that is inconsistent with priestly formation, you do not want to injure him or the people of God by letting him continue in that way. Therefore, you would then need to bring information to his formation advisor directly, or you could bring it to me as the rector. Okay? So those are 11 considerations for the exercise of fraternal correction. I would suggest that if and when another seminary wants to bring a concern to you, this is about receiving fraternal correction, that you listen to him carefully, and in a spirit of openness, hear what he has to say to you. Because the temptation might be on your end, who does he think he is, as you're aware of his own faults? Be humble and be docile, okay? You might want to ask for clarification if he's sharing information with you. Again, his perceptions may not be accurate, but the fact that he has those perceptions should create in you a sense of curiosity, because if he is seeing certain things by perception, well, so are others probably. So again, be humble in the reception of fraternal correction. Again, this must always be rooted in prayer, gentlemen. I know prayer is what motivates the spirit of this house. I know that you all are taking this very seriously by way of creating a community that is healthy and that is holy. And I believe that this house is mature enough to be able to exercise fraternal correction and also to receive fraternal correction. Not as a man sees does God see, because man sees the appearance, but the Lord looks into the heart. Open your hearts up so that the Lord can look into it with you, that you're able to look into your own heart with God's grace, because conversion must be done in freedom. Everyone in this chapel this afternoon wants to be a saint. We can only embrace holiness and conversion when we're humble enough to know where sin exists, the effects of our broken human condition exists, and the foibles that often get in the way of just day-to-day community living. And so I pray that this community will be able to exercise fraternal charity in the best way, that apostolic friendship will always prevail, so that we can respect one another, that we can love one another, and that we can pray for our own salvation during this time of our life. God wants all of us to be at Notre Dame Seminary right now, as formators, as your rector, and he wants each of you to be here. Let's take advantage of what he has in store for us. Let us praise the Lord and give him thanks. Thanks for your attention at this rector's conference this afternoon. God bless.